Azerbaijani guitarist Rahman Mehmedli. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting here at the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. We turn now to look at the controversial push here at the UN Climate Summit to expand nuclear power production across the globe. Supporters of nuclear energy view it as a carbon-free energy source that's needed to combat the climate crisis. But critics warn nuclear power is too expensive and risky. Last year at the UN Climate Summit in Dubai, more than two dozen countries, including the United States, pledged to triple nuclear energy capacity. In a statement, the country said expanding nuclear energy is needed for, quote, achieving global net zero greenhouse gas emissions, carbon neutrality by or around mid-century, and in keeping 1.5 degrees Celsius limit on temperature rise. Six more countries joined the pledge last week. The Biden administration recently unveiled a plan to create an additional 200 gigawatts of nuclear energy capacity by mid-century. The incoming Trump administration is expected to continue the push to expand nuclear energy. Trump's pick for energy secretary, the fracking magnate, CEO Chris Wright, sits on the board of the nuclear power startup Oklo. Meanwhile, private tech companies are also investing in nuclear energy. Google's announced plans to build seven small nuclear reactors in the U.S. to help power the company's data centers and artificial intelligence systems. Microsoft has said it would fund the reopening of the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant, the site of the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. And Amazon's cloud computing subsidiary has signed a deal with Dominion Energy to develop small nuclear reactors. We're joined right now by three guests. Alex de Vries, we're going to go to first. He's joining us from Amsterdam, a PhD candidate who studies the sustainability of emerging technologies at the VU Amsterdam University. He's the founder of Digiconomist, a research company dedicated to exposing the unintended consequences of artificial intelligence and cryptocurrencies. Alex, we're going to begin with you. Can you explain why there is such an enormous need for energy when it comes to artificial intelligence, AI data centers?
Yeah, of course. Well, the thing with generative AI and, well, huge applications like ChatGPT is that they're really using massive models in the background. And one typical dynamic is that the bigger you make those models, the better they perform, which is what everyone wants. But the downside of that is that bigger models also means more computational resources are required and thus energy in the end. When we had multi-million parameter models just a few years ago, now you're talking about models with billions or even trillions of parameters, and they just keep growing because everyone wants to offer the best user experience, but that costs a lot of resources.
So talk about, I mean, I don't know even how much people understand. I mean, in 2016, you found one Bitcoin transaction consumes as much energy as the average American household does in a day. Why does AI, why do cryptocurrencies, we talked about Amazon, we talked about Google, I mean, also Elon Musk with cryptocurrencies, with Bitcoin, why do they require so much electricity?
Yeah, they actually both contain economic incentives to keep spending more on energy. In the case of cryptocurrency mining, there is a reward available for those who participate in the mining process. And ultimately, everyone is incentivized to just, you know, keep putting in more computational power as long as it's profitable to do so. So the more money is available as reward, which has been growing over the past few years as the Bitcoin price kept going up in value, the more people put in energy-hungry equipment to participate in that process. And with AI, it has very similar incentives in the sense that everyone wants to have the biggest, best, and most energy-hungry model simply because the biggest models offer the best user experience. And that in turn will give you the biggest market share and thus the highest revenues. So both of these technologies contain different but still economic incentives to keep using more resources to make these applications run.
So why is Bitcoin responsible for more than 95% of the carbon footprint of all cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, that's because Bitcoin uses the very specific mining process where in order to create a new block for the underlying blockchain, a new block of transactions, everyone in the Bitcoin network has to participate in what I like to describe as a massive game of guess the number, whereas the whole network is making an insane amount of calculations every second of the day, 600 quintillion attempts. That's like 600 with 18 zeros every second of the day, nonstop. One participant guesses correctly every 10 minutes and then gets to create the next block for the blockchain, and they get a reward for that. These miners are earning up to or more than $10 billion a year from this process. But of course, they are also spending a huge amount of money on the energy to participate in this process. And nowadays, actually more than entire countries like Sweden and Argentina just for mining Bitcoin. But other cryptocurrencies, they use other types of algorithms, so those algorithms are not dependent on computational effort. This is why Bitcoin is kind of the only big cryptocurrency left standing today, which still uses the extremely energy-intensive mining.
So I wanted to ask you about the organizations and the people who are pushing for nuclear energy to fulfill the demands of AI and cryptocurrency. If you can talk about some of these companies, well, we know Elon Musk, for example, is pro-nuclear.
Yes, of course. Well, there's actually two avenues here. First of all, what we see is that a lot of these tech companies are looking at existing nuclear energy sources as a way to power their AI operations today. One obvious advantage of nuclear power is that it's zero carbon energy. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to get this power from nuclear reactors that have previously been shut down. They're trying to revive these nuclear reactors. And this actually carries a very interesting safety dimension, because if you look at what goes on is that how these nuclear reactors, they get shut down at a certain point in time. They start to decay because the moment they shut down, they no longer have to meet safety regulations. And now these big tech companies show up and try to revive these facilities, which are already outdated and haven't been safe for quite some time, just to power their current AI operations because they want to have zero carbon energy. It carries a lot of safety risks. And then the other avenue is going forward. We also see a lot of talk about expanding the existing nuclear power supply to fuel future AI energy demand. But then the thing is, there's actually quite a bit of a mismatch between the needs of the tech companies today and, the ability to deliver that power to them. Because if you are building out new nuclear infrastructure, those are long-term projects that can take up to a decade to complete. Well, we're in the middle of an AI hype today, and no one is guaranteeing that there will still be this much demand for AI 10 years from now when your nuclear reactor is finished.
We're speaking to you in Amsterdam. The Netherlands had decided to phase out nuclear power, but then reversed its decision. There are two new nuclear plants being built there where you are.
You can see that nuclear power is indeed experiencing a bit of a revival. I guess everyone is realizing that this type of power is zero carbon, and that's what we need if we're going to go green. It's not as safe as wind or solar power, but then again, nuclear reactors nowadays, with the latest technological standards, are still very safe, but it's just that constructing them is relatively expensive compared to expanding the wind and solar power supply. So whether this is the best investment still remains a question.
Overnight here at COP29, the U.S. and U.K. signed new agreements for civil nuclear collaboration and said Australia was expected to sign, but Australia's acting prime minister confirmed today the country will not sign.
I can confirm that the Australian government will not be signing that agreement. For Australia, pursuing a path of nuclear energy would represent pursuing the single most expensive electricity option on the planet. For Australia, pursuing a path of nuclear energy would be pursuing a path which would see $1,200 added to the household energy bills of each household in this country. For Australia, pursuing nuclear energy would be pursuing a path which wouldn't see any new electricity into our grid in 20 years. For Australia, pursuing a path of nuclear energy would be pursuing a path which would only see, at best, 4% contributed to the electricity grid 2 decades from now.
Well, for more, we're joined here in Baku at the COP29 Climate Summit by Tim Judson, Executive Director of Nuclear Information and Resource Service, part of the Don't Nuke the Climate Coalition, and Leona Morgan, a Diné Community Navajo organizer with Don't Nuke the Planet and Hall No. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! As you listen to this conversation, Tim, overall, we can hear everywhere here. I mean, the environmental movement is divided on nuclear power. And with this push on AI, on cryptocurrencies, I mean, you need nuclear power plants to fund one data center. It's absolutely astounding. The reopening of Three Mile Island. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing you got to understand about this recent wave of announcements about deals between nuclear power companies and data center companies and tech companies is that none of this involves buying power today. These are all deals to buy, to potentially buy nuclear power years down the road, when some of these plants might exist. But the reality is that the tech industry is building data centers and operating data centers today, which are consuming huge amounts of power. And that's largely being powered, by just what's on the grid, which is largely fossil fuel energy. In fact, in some of the places, a lot of the states in the country where this is happening, you're seeing things happen like they're extending the operation of coal plants or restarting coal plants, or increasing the generation from gas plants and coal plants in order to power these data centers that are operating now. So, I think what we're seeing is that the tech industry, especially under the Biden administration, is under some pressure to show that they're actually, being pro-climate. But they don't want to wait to build data centers until they can build nuclear power plants. They're doing that now. And so it really seems more like what's going on here is sort of an elaborate greenwashing scheme.
So you can't help but notice that you have, President-elect Trump's partner-in-chief here, Elon Musk, in charge with Vivek Ramaswamy of DOGE, that's the Department of Government Efficiency. Clearly, the way that we're going to be cutting billions out of the U.S. government budget is to deregulate this at a time when they're pushing to build nuclear power plants. Talk about the deregulation of nuclear power.
Sure. Well, there's actually been a tremendous amount of pressure over the last several years, orchestrated by the nuclear industry through Congress, to pass various bills and pieces of legislation that are already rolling back nuclear safety regulation at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And so the NRC over the last couple of years has actually been rewriting its regulations on how they license and permit the construction of nuclear power plants to make it, streamlined, more efficient, what they say more predictable. But this is really just keeping the public out of the process and creating a set of regulations that there's no transparency to whatsoever.
Leona Morgan, I saw you the other day here in the hallways of the UN Climate Summit. You both were a part of an anti-nuclear action. I've also interviewed you about what's going on in the Southwest United States. You're Diné Navajo. Talk about the experience of the uranium cycle, uranium needed to fuel these nuclear power plants, and what happens on reservations and areas curious where indigenous people live here.
Sure, thank you. So the first thing I want to say is that nuclear is not carbon free. Nuclear is not carbon neutral. It requires fossil fuels in order to extract the uranium, mill it, process it. All of the steps before the nuclear power plant require some type of energy. And so it is not fueled by renewables or nuclear. It's fueled by fossil fuels. And they just simply don't count the carbon footprint before the nuclear power plant or after the nuclear power plant. So in the Southwest, we're dealing with thousands of abandoned uranium mines. We're dealing with a conventional uranium mill that's taking waste from as far away as Japan and Estonia because there are not enough properly licensed waste facilities. And the same with the high-level radioactive waste after the power plant. There are two proposals in the United States to store it in New Mexico and Texas, and we fought that and we won. However, the industry is taking that to the Supreme Court. So we don't know what will happen. Maybe in June we'll find out. Hopefully our victory stands. But again, the nuclear industry is inherently racist. All of these activities, they depend on uranium, which comes mostly from indigenous lands, not just in the United States, but even as we're talking, you can think about other countries, Australia. Our Don't Nuke the Climate Coalition includes several folks from all over the world. And I also want to highlight what's going on in Africa. There's only one nuclear power plant in Africa, and Coburg is also slated to be restarted because of this push for a so-called carbon-free energy future. And so I just want to make it clear that it's not carbon-free, and it depends on the resources from our communities resulting in various health, lots of health effects. So we haven't even begun to study all of the health effects, especially the genetic future. We know that it causes, besides cancers, autoimmune disease, kidney disease, things like that, also reproductive issues. And so we really need to do more studies on the impacts from drinking contaminated water, breathing contaminated air, and eating contaminated food.
Leona Morgan, talk more about what's happened in Native America.
Well, going back to the beginning of colonization, I mean, I like to start with the doctrine of discovery, but from the 1872 mining law, which was created essentially to steal our land, we're still dealing with thousands of abandoned uranium mines, and there is absolutely no funding to clean these sites up. The United States, our taxpayer dollars are going to fuel not just this so-called nuclear renaissance or this nuclear revival, but also nuclear weapons. And so a lot of these so-called small modular reactors, they say they're going to power our communities, but a lot of it is going to be used for nuclear weapons. And so with that, we're dealing with, on Navajo Nation, where I come from, and most of the United States, we're downwind from over 900 nuclear tests from the Nevada site. So we're hit doubly with the nuclear weapons impact and then the nuclear power impact, because both of them require uranium. And so anybody living near abandoned uranium mines or anywhere there was uranium in the past are going to be threatened with new threats of new mining, new milling, new processing, and all the things that come with it, including the cancers, the contamination, and an unknown reproductive
future.
Talk more
about the uranium mines and what has happened to them.
So the uranium mines, especially in the Southwest, I'm going to focus on Navajo Nation. This is one place in the U.S. where they're kind of doing cleanup. Again, there's no funding for cleanup. We just lost what is called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, or RECA. And so the United States, since the 90s until just earlier this year, the United States provided some funding for compensation for people who worked in mines, only people who worked after 1971. And the eligibility is quite sparse. And so even RECA, people like Navajo miners, claim that it is also racist, that they have not received the same amount of compensation as, let's say, non-Native or white miners. So what's happening in the country is there's no funding to clean up the abandoned uranium mines. And on Navajo, where there is some funding, not because the government is giving the funding, because the government is looking for responsible parties to sue. And if they're lucky enough to get some money out of those companies, then they can do what they consider cleanup. Cleanup is never done to community standards. So there are over 500 abandoned uranium mines on Navajo alone, some say up to 2,000. And if they're marked off or have a fence, that's great, because then people will know this is a contaminated place and not to build their houses there, not to plant food, not to play or work or pray in those areas. So a lot of these places are left unmarked with radioactive dust blowing around and getting into the water and our food sources.
We're going to break and then come back to this discussion. I also want to ask Alex DeVries more, because people may be very surprised by this whole push for small nuclear power plants to fund these AI mining, these AI data centers around the world. Leona Morgan is with us, DNA organizer with Don't Nuke the Planet, and Tim Judson, executive director of the Nuclear Information Resource Center, also with Don't Nuke the Planet. Stay with us. A new song by Kim Deal. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit here in Baku, Azerbaijan. We are still joined by our three guests, Leona Morgan, DNA organizer with Don't Nuke the Climate. Also, Tim Judson, executive director of Nuclear Information and Resource Service. And joining us from Amsterdam is Alex DeVries, founder of Digeconomist. I want to get to Alex in 1 minute, but I want to talk about alternatives and where you see, especially at this climate summit. Tim, let's begin with you. The whole issue of renewables, and we know how the government has funded the nuclear power industry for years, that it was dying, for example, in the United States because they couldn't afford the insurance alone and the threat of a meltdown, as we've seen from Chernobyl to Three Mile Island. But now there's a resurgence. Could you imagine if that money went into renewables?
I mean, it would be huge if it went into renewables. I mean, but the thing is that it's actually not necessary for all that money to go in, all that public money to go into renewables, because renewables are already affordable as it is, you know, just to be built if they, you know, if people were given the, you know, were given the access to them. But the nuclear industry is pound for pound the most subsidized energy industry in the, you know, in history, and the fact that they're pumping more and more energy, more and more money into it as this industry is basically on the verge of decline, is really one of the most false solutions that we're talking about in the context of the climate talks. You know, if nuclear, you know, had to stand on its own 2 feet, you know, it would phase out within a decade. But what we're seeing is this push to promote nuclear really as a hedge against the decline of fossil fuels and a way to continue drilling and, you know, and burning gas and oil.
Leona Morgan, very quickly, on this issue of renewables, also your fight right now around the Grand Canyon, you're also also with the group Hull No. That's H-A-U-L.
Yes, thanks, Amy. We're fighting this uranium mine owned by Energy Fuels, which also owns the only uranium mill in the country. And so the mine would extract on Havasupai lands, and the mill is on Ute Mountain Ute lands, and the transport goes through Dene Bekea, so our lands. And this is being pushed, you know, all over the place, new uranium mining permits, new everything. And it's really not going to solve the energy crisis. There is absolutely no transition that's going to be able to power what humans what we're consuming today. On indigenous lands, we're dealing with all kinds of different projects, such as hydrogen hubs and lithium mines. On our relatives' lands in Nevada, they're trying to protect a sacred site called Pima Hub. And then the Hualapai in Arizona, they're actually being mined by our tribe, the Navajo Nation. And so as we're fighting to protect our land and uphold our sovereignty, because the Navajo Nation has a law against transport, Hall No and others, we're also working to hold our own Navajo Nation accountable to not mine on our neighbors' sacred places. And so it's not just uranium, it's all of these transitional minerals that are going to affect some community somewhere. And we don't want that. We need to reduce our consumption in order to have not just a peaceful environment, but a safe and wholesome, how do you say, we're really concerned about our well-being. And in Diné, we say Hajon. We want a place where we can practice our culture and live in Hajon.
In these last few minutes, we're coming back to Alex de Vries in Amsterdam, founder of Digeconomist, a research company dedicated to exposing the unintended consequences of artificial intelligence and cryptocurrencies. And I'm also looking at a piece by Elizabeth Colbert in the New Yorker magazine, The Obscene Energy Demands of AI. How can the world reach net zero if it keeps inventing new ways to consume energy? And the piece begins with you, Alex. Is it true something like what it would take to fund GPChat is the fuel it would take would fuel the country of Ireland, Alex?
Yeah, indeed, it could be the case. Specifically, I try to visualize what would happen if we would just turn Google into a ChatGPT, whereas a single ChatGPT interaction consumes actually just a very small amount of power, just 3 watt-hours, which is, you know, something like a low-lumen LED light bulb for running for 1 hour. But then again, at the scale of Google, you're talking about 9 billion of those interactions every single day. And then you will indeed have the power need of a country like Ireland just to power that. And I actually quantified that all AI-related energy consumption could quite rapidly go up to the level of a country like Argentina by the year 2027, just to power artificial intelligence alone. That doesn't include all other data centers that we use for basically cryptocurrency mining and everything else. So yeah, we see these energy demands are rapidly rising, and in a world where we have a limited renewable energy supply available, that just means that we are going to be using more of our backup energy source, which is fossil fuels.
Alex de Vries, we want to thank you so much for being with us, founder of Digeconomist, speaking to us from Amsterdam. Leona Morgan, DNA organizer with Don't Nuke the Climate, as well as Hall No. And Tim Judson, executive director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, also part of Don't Nuke the Climate Coalition. Yes, we are broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. We want to wish a very happy birthday to Ivan Incapié. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman from Baku, Azerbaijan.
Listen to Home of Burnaby Rock, CJSF's Lux Rock Electronic Show. 2 hours of relative power each and every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., and repeats every Thursday, 10 to midnight, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Do it.